episode 40.
So just like you get an update from McAfee or Symantec for your desktop computer, or you get updates to your phone, your car is going to have to do the same thing.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results On Point, focusing on a single topic with a guest who goes on point with the subject matter. A warm welcome to Roger Lonto, Associate Director, Strategy Analytics. Roger, are you ready to go on point?
I'm here. I'm ready to go.
Hello, fellow aftermarketer. Carm Capriotto here. Now, warning, put on your propeller beanie and put on your best geek t-shirt. We're going all in with this technology episode. But first, I want to know where you're listening from. Go to my Facebook page, Our Results Podcast, or even search in Facebook for Remarkable Results Podcast, and post a picture from wherever you listen. Do a selfie, and let me and the Aftermarket Tribe know where and when you listen. There are thousands of listeners to the podcast, so click and post where in the world you are listening from, and I do thank our international listeners. Now about Roger Lonto, our guest. He's Associate Director, Global Automotive Practice from Strategy Analytics, Inc. They're a global research and consulting firm that provides insights and strategic business solutions to companies operating at the convergence of information, communications, and entertainment technologies. Roger is going to open up our minds to the technology of the connected vehicle and how it is morphing into what it will become based on government, automakers, and technology companies working separately and sometimes together to bring vehicle technology towards some form of standardization, and then sometimes maybe not. Listen to when Roger talks about differentiation, you'll get that part. If you want to get your dose of technology buzz, you've come to the right place. You need to know this or respect where it's all heading. You'll hear about DSRC, Dedicated Short Range Communications, and how Roger feels about that. Software updating, hacking, vehicle data extraction, distracted driving, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, and where Silicon Valley and Detroit are heading. Buckle up for this one. Here we go with Roger Lonto. Roger, I recently read an article from Bloomberg Business in February. It talked about software is becoming so important and it's becoming more and more differentiating, and it's not up to the traditional car manufacturers anymore on how these cars are going to run. And just let me give onus to the authors, Adam Satariano and Tim Higgins from Bloomberg Business. What are they saying there to us?
Well, the car has become defined increasingly by the software, not by the hardware. So traditionally, you know, it's funny, I'm looking over your shoulder at your brake shoe clock there. It was a mechanical experience, the car, brakes and an engine, four wheels, you know, bumpers, that's what it was all about. Now it's increasingly about the software. People are, I'm not going to say people are not interested in performance and not interested in the driving experience, because you clearly have Ford drivers, Chrysler drivers, and even more importantly, perhaps Audi drivers and BMW drivers that want and look for a certain experience. But that experience is increasingly being defined by software, because software is touching safety, it's touching performance, it's touching the content and information you're receiving as you're driving. And so software encompasses everything and is bringing all of this together.
So today, we're going to have a friend inside of our vehicle, and that is a piece of software managing almost our every move.
Managing. I'd say responding to or anticipating. Okay. Well, maybe we'll get to managing. I don't want to get too paranoid about this quite yet, but I'm not going to rule that out, and maybe that's the ultimate objective. But responding to and anticipating. So the car, the software in the car, in fact, the map is essentially the browser for the car. So everything you do in the car is mapped to a position, and increasingly the car is going to want to know where it is and where it's going and why, and that's going to dictate what sort of information it's feeding to the driver to create a safer, more secure driving experience. So you turned this way, you braked at this point. I know, as your car, with the content that I have, what the speed limit is here, and I can see you're going a little bit over the speed limit. You might want to you know, be a little careful because you're coming to a very sharp turn where the speed is going to be much lower. Oh, by the way, you're in the city now, and the speed limit is 25 miles an hour throughout this city that you're in. And there are some traffic cameras nearby and speed cameras. So, and be careful, I'm detecting oncoming traffic. So you see, just as your browsing experience, hey, I'm looking for this or I'm going there, will give you results, your driving is going to represent, your driving behavior is going to be the equivalent of queries to the system, both the onboard and offboard system, and you'll be getting feedback just like you get results from a Google or an Internet Explorer.
Okay, so I'm in Detroit a few weeks ago. They're talking about the connected car, and that's really where we're driving and why you're on. I'm a connected vehicle. Wi-Fi is going on, and I'm sitting at a red light, and I'm getting ready to go, but yet there's a truck coming by. He's lost his brakes, and his system is taking over, knowing that he's going to pass through a red light, and not only does it help him stop, but it prevents my car from going forward. Now, is that Star Wars, or is that really going to start happening?
Yeah, what you're describing, when you think about it, the fact that cars don't anticipate things today for the most part is sort of counterintuitive. I mean, it's one of these things like, Steve Austin, the $6 million man. We have the technology. We can make these cars better. So what are we waiting for? No, I think what you're describing is a little bit Star Wars-y. It's that DSRC, Wi-Fi-based, vehicle-to-vehicle communication. The reality is that kind of communication can be enabled today through a combination of cameras, radar and LiDAR sensors, as well as the onboard connectivity that's embedded there in the wireless, the cellular modem that's in the car. So you've jumped right into the big debate. You've brought up the V2V, the government-mandated proposition that the government could very well decide to proceed with, which would require basically a box in every car,
right,
from the factory. But you can connect cars with phones. You can connect cars with the cellular modem. And actually, we're going to be increasingly connecting cars with satellites, and not just for Sirius XM communication, but for other kinds of communication. So I'm not a huge fan of the DSRC approach, because they're trying to mandate an old technology which has already been superseded. And but the intention is good.
Help me with DSRC. Help me with that.
Dedicated short range communication. So it's a dedicated channel for cars to communicate with each other. Now, you have to understand, the government, via the U.S. Department of Transportation, is trying to mandate this wireless connection in cars, which would be, as I said, another connectivity box in addition to the cellular box. Meanwhile, Congress is trying to put forward legislation to secure the car and to put, you know, to firewall every attack surface on the car. So one hand of the government is saying, put another attack surface in. Another hand of the government is saying, you have to protect that attack surface. There's a little bit of a conflict here.
Alrighty. Okay. So we've got automotive security. We have smartphone connectivity. How does all this thing work? Where's this? God, recently, all this stuff about hacking came up. You seem to be the expert who can help us understand this stuff.
I'm one of the experts, perhaps the least qualified, but I am an active observer, and we have clients who are active in the space. Problem in the industry is security is being approached in more or less a Band-Aid fashion. Car makers are being forced to respond to individual hackers who are, you know, achieving these penetrations either by getting into the dashboard and reverse engineering software and tearing apart hardware.
Roger, is this being done just to prove that it's vulnerable?
Well, this is the thing. Car companies will say, you know, we're all over this. We've tackled this. We understand the problem. The reality is, cars have been security sieves for years. Cars have never been secure. Cars are a unique case. I mean, imagine if you had to park your smartphone on the street and leave it outside all night, or leave it in a parking lot. They're just very vulnerable. And if someone can go in there and tear it apart and put it back together and reverse engineer the code, it's that much more vulnerable. And in fact, the car companies are required to put this onboard diagnostic port in the vehicle to allow anybody, you know, to allow third parties to repair the car. So anybody has the right to plug into that port and get the diagnostic code so they can service the vehicle. This, in the U.S., we call it right to repair. It has different names in different parts of the world, but there's the same principle that the car companies need to leave the vehicle open to third parties who may want to service the car. So securing cars is really a philosophical activity. You have to be mindful of security throughout the design of the vehicle and the creation and production and delivery and servicing of the vehicle. And no matter how rigorous your steps and measures that you've taken as a car maker to secure the car, number one, you have multiple systems. You've probably got 50 electronic control units in the car that need to be secured. There are four or five different networks in the vehicle that need to be secured. In your desktop computer, you know, you've got a single processor and, a single point of connection. You know, there's much, much greater control, whereas in the car, all these systems have to talk to each other, and all of them are vulnerable to different points of entry, whether it's the radio or the tire pressure monitor or other vehicle sensors. They all have to communicate. They all have to share. And in fact, the demand is increasing for them to be converged and interacting with one another. So the requirement for security is becoming increasingly intense. And with these different domains, you have different standard setting bodies that are involved. And now, of course, you have the internet involved in this activity. And so it's not just a question of firewalls. It is a question of network monitoring in the car, which is going to have to be in place, and a comprehensive approach. So it's not just one guy. It's going to take a department.
I can't help but think in my mind, is it the chicken or the egg? Is the door going to be shut before we go too far? Where do you see the firewall versus the use of technology? Where is that going to meet?
Well, I have a better analogy for you. So the horse is already out of the barn, okay?
Oh.
The door is open. And,
got it.
So
it's still an animal analogy, but I see what you're saying.
We're on the farm. But so we're chased as an industry, we're chasing the horse down. We're trying to lasso that horse. But, you know, that horse is a living thing, and we're going to have to keep track of that horse on an ongoing basis, which is why you're hearing so much about software updating. And in some of my conversations with some of the companies that are involved in the space, there's only a handful of car makers that can do any significant amount of software updates. So just like you get an update from McAfee or Symantec for your desktop computer, or you get updates to your phone, your car is going to have to do the same thing. Now, we've been hearing about Tesla. We do know that OnStar has this capability. BMW in some regions has some limited software update capability. Mercedes and some other car makers. Of course, if you have what we call a TCU, a telematics control unit in the car, you automatically or by necessity have to have software update capability for that module at least. But the idea is we're going to want to have software updating for all those 50 ECUs I was just talking about in
right,
the car.
Right.
And that process is going to have to be secure. So we're going to have to make sure we get the payload to the car, that the payload is then implemented, and then there's a validation step. And so what I'm hearing from some of the suppliers to the automakers is that possibly software updating, which is absolutely necessary before any car maker could lay any kind of claim to vehicle security, because you would have to be able to update your security, your codes, because there are always going to be new penetrations. So there is a possibility for retroactive installation of software update capability, some kind of rudimentary ongoing sort of finger in the dike, if you will, to protect cars. But it is a game changer. It's something the industry's been aware of, but now it's becoming something of a parlor game for hackers to go out and hack cars. The real threat, there are two real threats. One is people's personal information being tapped into, so their financial information or other, you know, privacy.
But that may be on the smartphone, not in the car.
Well, it could be information that's in your, you know, your cloud associated with your connected car, conceivably, if it's not properly secured.
Right. Okay.
And then the other risk, which is why the DSRC mandate is such a bad idea, is that multiple cars could be simultaneously hacked. So that really kind of was the implied risk in the Chrysler hack that was demonstrated on the Jeep.
I see.
The idea that vulnerability was so wide open and so significant that conceivably multiple vehicles could have been penetrated and taken over. So if you're a hacker, do you really care about taking over one car? Maybe, depending on whose car it is. But the idea of, you know, shutting traffic down if you're some kind of a terrorist or something, that might be a little bit more entertaining or interesting. So personal information, financial data, and or multiple cars simultaneously. So those are the big risks.
So Detroit's going to Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is hiring car people from Detroit. It's almost Silicon Valley versus Motor City, and that was some of the stuff that was in that Bloomberg article. Ford has a new Palo Alto lab headed by a mid-level Apple engineer. The autonomous car, the Google car, where is all this going?
With regard to the shift to Silicon Valley, there is deep concern in the industry that with so much money in Silicon Valley, now bear in mind it's much more expensive to live there as well, if you can find some place to live, the concern is that there's a brain drain, so that all the best minds in vehicle security ultimately end up residing in Silicon Valley. Similarly, all the best automotive design minds perhaps end up there, or all the automotive minds that are focused on disrupting the automotive industry, end up out there. And there are a lot of executives that are automotive industry people that are looking maybe for a bigger paycheck or to bring an idea to market that they can't get to market through their current employer. And maybe there's a Silicon Valley partner that's like, hey, we like that idea. We'll help you get that to market. By the way, something that a lot of people don't talk about is if you go further west, you're ultimately going east, which is China,
right,
which is the biggest market and the fastest growing market.
Right.
And there's a massive amount of software development activity and research activity that's shifting to that market. Now that, you know, that's a big decision. That's a culture shift. That's a whole different world. And then you're starting to worry about the quality of the air you're breathing, literally. That's a whole different story. But yes, Detroit is facing significant competition for the talent it needs to move to the next stage, this, as you said at the beginning of this conversation, this software-oriented world, this software-defined vehicle, I guess, would be the best way to describe it.
Do you think that Google or Apple will ever actually make hardware, meaning a car?
Yeah, I don't think there's any way for them to avoid making a car. I think it's too tantalizing a prospect. There are about 1 billion cars on the road today. We're on a path to having 2 billion. It's a multi-hundred-billion-dollar industry, massive when you keep in mind not only the hardware but the servicing of those products and all the consumables, and the fact that it is changing. We are shifting to non-carbon-based fuels and propulsion. And that opens the door wide to a whole bunch of new players, because the that internal combustion engine is a core part of the car. Cars are defined, have traditionally and historically been defined by that internal combustion engine.
Sure.
Changing the story to electrified propulsion completely changes the driving experience. It changes where the money's being spent. So you've got a much larger proportion of money being spent on the electric and semiconductor components. And as we've already said, software. I mean, there are some interesting things going on with fuel pricing right now that are not, you know, supporting that that market direction. But it's important to keep in mind governments, the Chinese government, the U.S. government, the European Union are all pushing hard on electrification.
Got it. Thanks. You just mentioned the word software. And as we're winding down, and I think I could listen to you, and I know our listeners could listen to you for an hour. I've been really tantalized by the things you're saying. But when you said the word software recently, I thought of Apple CarPlay. I thought of Google Android Auto. Where's that going? And how much fun or how much of a distraction is it going to be in our cars?
So the first step in getting into the cars is enabling safe interactions between mobile devices and the vehicle head unit. And so you have Apple CarPlay, and you have Google has Android Auto, and they've really pushed hard, really browbeaten the car makers into adopting these systems, and the car makers are concerned about not being the last guy, the one car, you know, seller on the block that doesn't have Apple CarPlay or that doesn't have Android Auto in the car. Now, it's a little bit confusing because a lot of the press reports have suggested, oh, this means things like Ford Sync or Toyota Entune or Chevy MyLink are going to go away. They're not going to go away. The car makers will have their own smartphone integration platforms because we do want people to connect their mobile devices in the car and then put the mobile device down, maybe even never take it out of their pocket.
Got it.
Okay. We don't want them looking at the phone. We don't want them touching the phone. And we certainly don't want them texting and driving. The NHTSA estimates, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimates that upwards of 3,000 people are losing their lives every year due to distracted driving, and a substantial portion of that is a result of texting and driving, et cetera. So really, we want people to connect their phones. Now, the question is, what is the difference between an Apple CarPlay connection and an Android Auto connection from Google? Well, there's a couple of critical differences I'll get to, but first off, if you have an Apple phone, if you have an iPhone, iPhone users are fanatical about their devices, and they are already going into dealerships asking for CarPlay. And CarPlay is only available from a few car companies right now, but it certainly has a head start on Android Auto from Google. Now, one thing I will say that Apple has in its favor is Apple controls its whole ecosystem, hardware and software.
Mm-hmm.
So if you I've had occasion to see Apple CarPlay in action, and it starts right up. It connects immediately. It's almost seamless and effortless, whereas Android Auto, it's a little bit more funky, and Google has a little bit less rigid control, in spite of its best efforts, of its customers and how they're implementing Android Auto.
Just what you'd expect, actually, from both companies.
So this is going to create confusion. Imagine you're a car salesman, and you've been fully briefed. You're selling Chevys, and you've been fully briefed on MyLink, and you want to show Pandora and any other apps they have working on that platform. Customer comes in and wants to know if you have CarPlay, and you say, well, what kind of phone do you have? And they have a Samsung. It's like, well, you have a Samsung, so what you really need is Android Auto, if that's what you're talking about. Oh, can you show me how that works? Well, you know, we don't have it yet, or maybe we have it on the spar. You know, it just gets mm-hmm. into this completely confusing conversation, and all of this is just so that the car maker can say, yes, we have that. It's a checkoff, like a checkbox. Yes, we have it. But you know, you want me to demonstrate it? We can try, you know, if that's what you really want to do.
Are you saying that they're reluctant to want to be get involved with, is it that the consumer wants this, or is this all about safety, putting the phone down?
The vast majority of consumers that are buying cars, and remember, the largest and fastest growing group of people who are buying cars are people like you and me, forgive me, who are a little older. a little more mature, let's say.
Maybe we're a little wiser too.
There you go. And so, you know, we're more interested in safety, and not that we're not interested in smartphone integration, but the smartphone integration becomes a little bit of a distraction from the core functionality of the car, which more likely is going to be the brand, the price, the type of car, the safety system, you know, whether it has leather, does it have the sports package. So it's not in the top of the consideration set. And the car maker, you know, is going to do his best to make sure these systems work, but there's going to be funky things that occur. Maybe the customer hasn't updated their smartphone operating system.
I see.
Maybe they don't have the app, you know, maybe Samsung implemented the app in the wrong way.
Got it.
Whereas the one thing the car company can guarantee is my link is going to work with whether it's an Apple phone or a Google Android.
So these are really these are add-ons.
It's an add-on. It's just it's a talking point. You're seeing a little bit of this stuff in cars. Like I think the ad I just saw the other day, Audi. You know, you have the drone ads with the Audi and, mm-hmm. and the guy's running to the car and everybody's being buzzed by these drones. And he says, Google search, you know, home, and bing, bang, boom, he's on his way. You know, it's all seamless. And that's great, except with these smartphone solutions, it's only going to do that if you're connected. So your voice recognition is offboard in the cloud. Your navigation is offboard in the cloud. Whereas if you're using an embedded system, it's on board. Okay, that's going to be the system you can rely on. So it's creating excitement and interest and things for the car makers and the dealers to talk about. But it's like when Bluetooth first arrived. Then you'd mm-hmm. go into your local BMW dealership and they'd have this brochure that would fold out and take up, you know, a quarter of a wall that would detail all the phones and all the Bluetooth compatibility
right.
all the cars, for all the functions. And so it's a little bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, I remember trying to figure it out on my car once and having to go online, read the book, and it took me a few days to figure it out. And then my smartphone needed an upgrade, which means I couldn't connect via my smartphone to Bluetooth. And then all of a sudden my Android, which is what I have, came out with an update. And then all of a sudden this car that I thought I was going to enjoy this connectivity with, it took 6 months until the world caught up to it.
Yeah. Well, if anything goes wrong, there's another connectivity platform out there called MirrorLink, and Skoda, the VW division in Europe, came out with it very quickly, very early on, and then customers complained because there were only a handful of phones that had MirrorLink, mm-hmm. and they blamed Skoda. So if there's any failure of CarPlay, people are going to blame the automaker, not Apple.
That's right. Yeah.
And so I'm a little concerned, and I'm sure the automakers are too, that this is going to create more trouble ultimately than it's worth. Now, the other big issue behind all this is vehicle data extraction. So if you're using a MyLink platform with a MyLink app on your phone that's connecting to your Chevy MyLink system, it's going to be informed by the onboard sensor data. And if your windshield wipers are on, it's going to know and inform the app that it's raining, or it's going to let you know through the app that your fuel level is low, or you know, it's going to have, you know, knowledge of where you are on the road, like I mentioned earlier, you
right.
know, hairpin turns, etc. Car makers are being very careful about what data they share with Apple and Google, because, as we know, Google is interested in search and advertising and gathering personal data on search and such. And Apple really is only concerned about selling their devices. But if these companies are allowed to access all the vehicle data, all the personal information, they could basically, as we say in the industry, disintermediate the car maker and the dealer and just take over that relationship. Why go to the dealer to get that repair or oil change? Why don't you go to Harry's oil change?
That's right.
Or Jiffy Lube?
Because Harry will buy the ad. I get it. And it is something I think that we need to worry about. Yeah.
The car makers are very concerned about that, and Google hasn't shown a whole lot of interest in protecting customer privacy. And if car makers want to have, you know, this is another key point, which is differentiation. So if I'm a car maker and I have my own dedicated smartphone integration platform that will work with any smartphone that I want it to work with, not just a Google phone, Android phone, or not just an Apple phone, and maybe I want to have certain apps in there that have some enhanced kind of functionality, maybe that would allow inter-vehicle communication through an app and a connected phone, perhaps. I want to control that interaction. I don't want to hand it off to Apple. And every car maker spends millions of dollars creating a unique customer experience in their vehicle. Like you said, anticipating needs, maybe managing those needs someday, but certainly understanding the whole driving experience and the customer experience and being there for that customer whenever they have some kind of crisis, big or small.
Yeah.
Apple and Google are getting in between that, and they're negating the whole user interface that's on that screen. They're saying, this is what the user interface is going to look like in Ford, in Audi, in BMW, in Mercedes, and it's all going to be the same.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you. I think you've been in this industry a while, and you've probably noticed that no two car stereos have ever looked alike. And there's a reason for that. It is called branding. It's
differentiation. You're right. You're right. How does a car company say, I've got all the toys, but my toys are better than the other person's toys? I think it's a great thing to bring up. Well, look at Roger. I want to say this. I've been so into this. I mean, not only am I the interviewer, but I have been listening and I've gained so much knowledge and I've gained a lot of respect, number one, for what's going on in the world and why people are concerned. I've gained a lot of respect for what you know about this. And so I may ask you in so many months or a little while down the road, hey, come on back, tell us where we stand right now, because I think this is going to become a very favorite episode with our listeners. So, Roger Lonto, Associate Director of Strategy Analytics, what a tour through this incredible maze of car connectivity, Wi-Fi, the connected car. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.